You were also unusual in that you were pregnant, and you were treating patients while you were pregnant. Did that cause controversy either with the hospital you were at or with the your family over being carrying a child and dealing with those patients?
I was pregnant with my fourth child when I saw my first patients with what turned out to be HIV infection. Again, at that time, we didn't know what it was. And I think I felt, you know, some degree of anxiety, and I was cautious. I was more careful than I am now because we didn't know as much about how it's transmitted. And I worried to some degree about spreading it to my child, either the one I was carrying or the ones I had at home. But common sense told me that if this disease were spread easily person to person, that there would have been a lot of sick physicians and healthcare workers in New York by that time. That this disease had to be spread, had to be relatively difficult to spread. And I think that's what initially made me feel fairly secure. I did worry about treating patients with very active CMV disease because I was CMV negative and I knew that. And I worried during the pregnancy about that. So I often would try to get my male counterparts to help in their care. But other than that, I really didn't have any problems. My husband was a general internist, and he really wasn't paying too much attention to what I was doing. But I did have one resident one month whose wife made him take off all his clothes at the front door and bag them up and dump them directly into the washing machine and go take a bath before she would let him in the house. So there were varying reactions, but I think during the, you know, there was some concern initially that you would carry something home to your family. Fortunately, it didn't take too long to get enough information to know that that was not likely.
Because being a physician in the field that you are and dealing with HIV patients, you know, the prognosis is not always, you know, great. They are going to eventually succumb to it. How do you keep yourself separate from these patients who, after a while, of course, you're going to have to develop some sort of bond with them? Or have you lost friends to this disease, personal friends that, you know...
I've lost several personal friends to the disease. I think that number one, you know, life's a terminal disease, and so we recognize that we're all going to die, and there isn't a physician on earth that can stop that. If as a physician you view death as a failure, then you have a lot of difficulty in coping with losing any patient. And you really can't look at it that way, because otherwise, if you do, you're always doomed to failure. You can't be very happy with yourself if you're feeling that. The way I look at it is that what I want to do is the best job I can, provide the patient with the best quality life I can for the longest possible time. And I think for the most part, I'm successful in doing that. You also want to be able to allow patients to do what they want to do. It's difficult to lose patients. I don't think anybody enjoys having someone die or knowing someone that's dying or has died. But you have to be able to separate yourself in some degree.
Do you feel that ignorance is ignorance of the disease is quite possibly, you know, the fuel that flamed the fire. Maybe that there's not enough, because, like, now the statistics are showing that the groups, highest groups of, you know, that are going to be infected are the women and the teenagers, both heterosexual teenagers and the up-and-coming gay teenagers now.
Well, I think that, I'm not sure it's ignorance per se. I think that the CDC did a survey a couple of years ago looking at graduating high school seniors and how, what percentage were knowledgeable about the basics of HIV infection. And about 85 to 90% of them knew basic facts about HIV infection. Unfortunately, knowing those facts doesn't translate into changing their behavior. And we continue to see that. Everybody says, well, you know, but gay males did change their behavior. And they did to some degree. I mean, the bathhouse is closed by and large. And the number of anonymous sexual partners decreased. But it didn't go to zero. And in order to stop this disease, it has to go all the way to zero. And that's the problem. The teenagers are a very difficult group to reach in terms of changing behaviors. And we come, you know, from a period in time where society's been very liberal sexually. I always tell people when I lecture that I'm from the Make Love Not War generation. You know, I mean, that sounded pretty good when everybody was dying in Vietnam. It just doesn't sound so good now. But it's hard to change. It's hard to make people, you know, celibate or monogamous for life. And that's really what it takes to curb this epidemic. It's not the same kind of disease as syphilis. If you get syphilis or gonorrhea, you can get treated and cured. And even if you don't get treated and cured, you become non-infectious after a period of time. With HIV infection, you can't be cured. You can be treated, but being treated doesn't make you non-infectious. And so you remain infectious for the remainder of your life. People that know they're dying of a terminal disease find it difficult to be celibate. You know, people who are addicts and find out they're dying of a terminal disease find it very difficult to care whether or not they share needles. You know, their needs and priorities are not necessarily on preventing the spread of infection to others. Many people don't want to be tested because they don't want to know, because they don't want to have to change their behavior. And so you see all kinds of patterns that just allow the disease to continue to spread. I don't know if there's a way that we can change that. I just don't know. But I do know that for 6,000 years we've been preaching monogamy, and it hasn't taken so far. So we have to do something other than that. And there has to be a fundamental change in the way we approach sexual behavior if we're going to have any impact on the spread of this disease.
You have 5 daughters and 1 son, and your eldest is a little over 16. How do you educate your children from the youngest one to the oldest one? Or do you start with, are you educating your younger children and just constantly educating them as they grow older when they come to a new stage where they need to be educated on maybe something different, you know?
Well, I think that, you know, education in the sense of talking to them about, you know, basic facts about reproduction and things like that, in our household is largely driven by the child's questions. I think they tend to ask questions when they're ready to hear the answers. And so that kind of fact-giving is usually, you know, in response to questions that they might ask. I think they hear me talking a lot, and I talk a lot about my work, and so they pick up the facts on HIV infection from listening to me talk. What I do is I have them meet some of my patients, bring them to the clinic from time to time, take them on rounds with me at the hospital, so that they know what AIDS looks like. I think that makes it more meaningful to them and hopefully more scary to them, to know that this is someone that they know, someone they've met, someone they've talked to, and then they're dead. And to know why they're dead and how they got it, and how they can avoid getting it. I told my 13-year-old that the slogan in our house was alive at 35, and that they were not going to become HIV infected while they lived in my household. But it's not easy. It's definitely not easy to raise teenagers in the era of AIDS.
Do you think that education is going to be what eventually helps conquer this disease? Or do you have views or a belief that there will eventually, maybe not a cure, but a way of, you know, containing it?
Well, I think if we look at, you know, history as an example, that our successes in preventing disease transmission have come not through changes in behavior, primarily. Although, to some extent, you know, it has come about through changes in some behavior. For example, having surgeons wash their hands cut down on a lot of post-operative infections. So some changes in behavior that were restricted to a small group and could be educated individually almost, you know, may have impact. But for the most part, prevention of transmission of disease, you know, in terms of sexually transmitted diseases and things like that, has come not through education, but from developing effective therapies. Infectious disease is the field in medicine where we've made the most advances, I think, in modern times. If we look at the history of viral infections, then most of our success has been with vaccines. So I tend to think that what will happen with HIV disease is that someday we will develop an effective vaccine. There's a lot of work going on aimed at that. And I think that if we do that and we can be successful in vaccine programs, that then we can stop the spread of the disease. That'll still leave us an infected population to care for, but it would stop new entry, and presumably would stop the disease. I think that that's probably what we're looking for. You know, vaccines have a lot of problems. One is that to develop and test a vaccine, even one that's very effective, like the hepatitis vaccine, took us 10 years, and we don't really have one yet that looks that good. So I think you're looking at something that's a long way down the road, and there are going to be a lot of deaths between now and then. Vaccines are very costly, so that although we could probably afford to vaccinate everybody in this country if we had a good vaccine, I'm not sure that in some of the third world countries the vaccine would be affordable.
What are your hopes for the future of this disease? You know, what are your feelings? What do you personally feel is going to eventually happen? Do you feel that there might be a vaccine, or do you feel that?
I think we'll eventually get a vaccine, and I think that's more likely than a cure. But certainly my hope is that we would get one or the other, or both, in the not-too-distant future.
Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to add?
I think the most important thing is that we all have to remember that regardless of our different points of view, we're all working for a common goal, which is to prevent transmission of this disease, and that we need to listen to what people are saying on all sides of this issue. I think that's been our big failing, is that we can't work together. We become so polarized over the issues involved, such as sexuality, that we can't focus on working on the real problem.
Well, thank you very much.
Excellent.